you said nobody was trying nutmegs for no reason. Well, Zaniolo tried one in the first half and it worked. I mean, this fella would nutmeg a lamppost. The commentators didn't even mention it, though. Like, they were talking about the fucking Kai Havertz rejuvenation or the title race or Man City or some bollocks. Anything other than the beautiful little nutmeg that Zaniolo just completed on the left wing.
Tim Sherwood here. You're listening to the Villa Podcast. That morning sky gave me a look. So I left.
You think he's going to win the Premier League, boss?
Man City 51 and Liverpool 49.
No Arsenal?
Nah.
The second half was just about to start and something happened. Something revealing. Zinchenko pulled them all in. They huddled up. And you knew there and then, you knew this wasn't anything to be afraid of. It was almost like a Scooby-Doo skit, this feared entity that we've been running around, causing all sorts of havoc, and you just pulled the mask off and realised it was human, it had flaws. And once they did that, you have to remember, Liam, they've just had 15 minutes in the changing room together. They've had analysis. They've had a whole squad discussion. They've had instructions, motivation from the manager. And they've had the chance for 15 minutes to say anything else that they needed to say to each other. But what would the point of that be if the crowd couldn't see it? And and as so often, we worried about Arsenal, the club, because this has been going on longer than the last few years. They're just not cold. They're not laser focused. They're not as intrinsically motivated as much that would help them. Like, they do like short-term gratification. They like credit for small things outside of trophies more than the greatest winners really do. Let's be real. They like to lick themselves. Like, that's what they like to do. And as Zinchenko forego the opportunity to speak to his teammates in the changing room for 15 minutes and instead pull them in for a pointless 20-second rally, Villa, on the other hand, came out with a plan to actually control the ball for the next 10 minutes of the start of that second half, and a plan to control that game away to a team who hadn't even been behind for all of 2024. And in the process, they took back control of the race for fourth place.
Yeah. Arsenal do like to sit around licking themselves, you're right. And that is despite signing Alexander Zinchenko. I mean, he was the difference maker. He was the banker. He was the one that was going to get them over the line. The big time player, the man who had won it all, the man who had seen it all. What everybody failed to mention was that, yes, he had seen it all from the fucking bench. And what does this tell you about Arsenal, that Zinchenko and Jesus were heralded as difference makers? Like a change in attitude and approach. Like, come on. This pains me to say it. Arteta is clearly a very good manager if he is able to sustain 33 game title charges with this collection of players that are improved by those two. Like, it pains me to say it because he was given 4 years to do that, to shape the club and the players exactly how he wanted to. So that has to be tempered enthusiasm, which one might praise him. But it also pains me to say it because he's a cunt. Like, I actually think he might be the most detestable human in the Premier League. And that might surprise some long-term listeners to the podcast who would have been forgiven for thinking that maybe I had stronger feelings against the man Arteta must have been following around in the showers in Brescia, pulling his nandrolin saturated hair from the drains and sellotaping it to the top of his own head so he could role play him in the future. But it's not. I actually think I dislike Arteta more. But credit where it's due, Conan. That is 2 years in a row now, after 3 years of nothing and £700 million of transfers. That's 2 years in a row that he has led a title charge for 85% of the season with Zinchenko and his squad. It is laudable.
And it was an absolutely brilliant performance. It's 6 points that Aston Villa have taken from Arsenal now. And this one was an even better performance, because the last one was coming off the back 3 days later from the Man City match when we destroyed them at home. We got the result with an unbelievable goal and then dug it out to win 1-0 at home. This one was two good teams going at each other. And one team deserving the win more and deserving a 2-0 win in the end of it all. I mean, Villa were under pressure at the start of the first half. By the end of halftime, Villa had 47% possession. I didn't expect that to happen. They completely stood toe-to-toe with them and then just grew and grew into the game. You got the feeling. I'm playing around a little bit with the Zinchenko thing. I do think it's telling. I think that does sum up what I've often been saying about Arsenal over the last four seasons on this podcast. But you just knew as the game was going on around the 60th minute mark, Villa were getting stronger, and the crowd, the away fans, that unbelievable away section in the corner of the Emirates was getting more and more giddy, and the players were feeding off that as well. It was such a strong performance.
That was amazing, Colin. It was kind of like the reverse of that Titanic tour we did yesterday. You know, the first half was much like the second half of the Titanic tour. It was really tough, really interesting. But, you know, it's about 1,500 people dying. So it's about getting through it, really, absorbing as much as you can, trying to stay positive because it's supposed to be a birthday party or a game of football, whatever way you want to look at it. But the second half of that match was so much like the first half of that Titanic tour. It was just a bit of crack, optimism, ambition. You know, it takes a lot of balls to play like that at the Emirates against the team trying to go top of the table, just like it takes a lot of ambition and rivets to build the world's biggest and fastest ship. this fucking analogy could do a few rivets to keep it together, to be honest. But the work that those boys got through, I'm talking about the Aston Villa players, not even done with the shipyard lads, as admirable as that was, the shift that Zaniolo and Carlos and Tielemans and McGinn put in, the shift they put in to wrestle back control that game, yeah. Because we did have to dig in for the first 30 minutes and then to just turn that around, which isn't fucking easy, to turn that around was incredible. I didn't think that doesn't normally happen. That doesn't normally happen against a top team. If a top team gets on top, they normally stay there. Mm. But Jesus Christ, those boys put on some effort.
The balls is a good way of putting it. There was so much bravery in the way Villa played, the way like they were able to get control back of the game because they were all willing to show for the ball over and over to help each other out. And everybody was perfect in what they were doing. Nobody was dicking around too much. Nobody was trying nutmeg for no reason. They were doing stuff at the right time. They were trying things at the right time. They were playing it safe when they had to play it safe because they were continuously backing each other up. It was just such a laser-focused performance from Aston Villa. It was everybody on it. And I tell you what else I love. We haven't gotten into the goals yet, right? And I need to bring this to the top of the show because there are too many nominations for the quote of the week this week. So I just need to mention this one right now. And it sums up Villa, right? I know we watch these games and it sort of feels like, you know, when you're watching it through Sky Sports especially, it feels like you're playing FIFA career mode. You know, where it's all revolving around one team. And there's another team there, and they're just there as a necessary conflict, you know, an obstacle in the way of the protagonist. And the protagonist is always one of these super six teams, like Arsenal in this case. And even after Villa outplayed them, even after Villa beat them 2-0, after Villa put themselves 3 points clear in the race for fourth, and moved closer to Arsenal and Liverpool in the league as well, by the way. The first time I've been looking up at those two in a while, although I am still looking over my shoulder at Newcastle now. I didn't have them on my bingo card, but now I'm getting worried about Newcastle. We'll come back to that. But even with all that, Ollie Watkins is asked afterwards. It's still framed through the Arsenal tinted glasses. Nobody's watching this anymore from an Arsenal point of view. Not that that would matter anyway. There's so many neutral
definitely
fans.
Definitely not watching it from the fucking stadium anyway.
Exactly. There's so many neutral fans. There's so many Villa fans watching it. And Watkins is asked afterwards, you have a soft spot for Arsenal, don't you? What on earth is going on? And it's just the most beautiful response ever from the most beautiful man of all time. Ollie Watkins said, I used to. When I grew up, I was always supporting Arsenal, but it's a different story now I'm playing against them. Full stop. Thank you. Good night.
I really hope that the lad who asked that question didn't have a good night. I hope they were lying in bed just all night staring at the ceiling thinking, did I say you have a half spot for Arsenal? They actually asked that on live TV of an Aston Villa player just as their season is kickstarting back into gear. And you know what the weird thing about this, making this all about Arsenal? I know Arsenal were playing, but they could have at least lent into the fact that Aston Villa have pulled away from Spurs, because you know they'd have the opposite talk about a big 16. But why not frame it like that? Why? Because they surely know at this stage they have to talk about the team that won, the team that played better, the team that just delivered a masterclass. Talk about them, but you can always just hook it back on to the big 16s that you want to talk about by talking about Spurs getting dragged by Aston Villa. Why not that? Why do you have to keep talking about Arsenal fucking 25 minutes after the game is done and 45 minutes after they stopped engaging in that game of football?
Let's talk about the goals. And the first one comes from, it's a poor short corner routine, let's be real. But, you know what? I was feeling so good. I saw Austin McPhee celebrating it as well. I don't even think he was trying to take credit for it. I don't think he's counting that as one of the corners that led to a goal. I think Austin McPhee was just happy that the team he's spending so much time and effort with scored a goal and took a lead at the Emirates. And I was like, yeah, Austin, you know what? I'm going to give you this goal as well. Put that into your little tally because it is a poor corner. And it comes to Leon Bailey. Comes to Leon Bailey and it comes to his preferred right foot and he just slides it in to the right spot and it is absolutely glorious.
Yeah, like, I mean, let's get real. I know we're high, we're euphoric, we're punch drunk, but let's take a step back and get a bit of levity. You know, it's easy to get carried away, so sometimes it's important to take a breath, take a beat. But is there anyone else in world football you would want that ball rolling to on a stronger foot as well, like you said? Like, it's not the hardest of chances I've ever seen, but it's also, I've also seen it be missed
Yeah.
But there was absolutely no question that Leon Bailey wasn't going to slot that, especially when it was falling to his right foot. And maybe a more pertinent question here is there a left back in world football you'd rather be on the opposition team when Leon Bailey is warming up on the hour mark than Alexander Zinchenko? The fucking RMS Carpathia couldn't have come to his rescue. And he's not involved in this goal, but he has a plonker, so I thought I'd circle back to him. Sorry, I don't know why I'm absolving him of his sins here by saying he's not involved. The ball is knocked in at the left-back spot when he's at the other side of the box trying to get into a huddle with the two Arsenal players who are already out there trying to deal with Luka Dean. He was just standing at the side of that box watching Luka Dean get in behind. It was bizarre.
And then immediately after, right, so this is what happened. We were away for the day and I was doing a run. I was doing a lift, I had people in the car, and I, because you do this weird thing where you don't want to know the score, which I just can't, I don't know how you could do that whilst you know what's going on. You know, you know all this is happening and you know I'm checking my phone right beside you. You don't want to know the score and I know everything. And I knew this whole time it was 0-0. And this has never happened to me before. Normally it's bad news, right? I dropped everybody off, said bye, said I love you. And then I turned up the radio and Villa, within about 20 seconds, scored the goal. Leon Bailey, they kept saying weaker right foot. They said it three times, actually, on his weaker right foot. Because it was a good finish, so it is worth noting. But then, you know, all I hear then, and amidst all this, and I heard there's 6 minutes left, and I was like, oh, how many out of times are going to be, oh, God, you know, and then I heard, but Arsenal have a corner, and I was like, oh, fuck, here we go. And then they said Rodgers headed it, but it didn't go clear. Was it Tielemans tried to clear it, but it didn't go clear. It came to Zinchenko, and I was just thinking, oh, it's going to happen. And then all hell broke loose and it was just noise reverberating from the away stand again. I mean, this is, I think it was a Jorginho ball. It's a very tame pass, really, especially with Tielemans around. I mean, we had doubts about Tielemans last 90 minutes at centre midfield. Forget about it. Tielemans can do what he wants to do and he'll cut out any sort of weak pass in his direction. And he just lofts it over the top to Ollie Watkins. And Jesus, once Ollie Watkins knows Smith Rowe is on him, it is game over. I mean, he just how he decides to serve it up for us, really. And wow, does he serve it up on a silver platter. The control, the ignorance to get in his way, the little deceleration before he bursts off, and the cheeky, cheeky chip. And like, what a celebration it was, too. I don't think I've seen a celebration like this before, where he just goes over the cross. It looks like there's about 4,000 people just falling over each other. Like, it's absolutely insane. And Watkins is looking at them, laughing, holding the corner flag, and he does this little hand gesture, you know, from out in front to the side, you know, enjoy. like, there you go, enjoy it. And it was just perfect for what was happening in front of him.
Yeah, I think actually the goal before, I didn't mention it there, was Watkins picks the ball up from the net, then realizes he doesn't want the ball anymore and drops it, and then he picks up Pau Torres. Pau Torres gets the ball and just boots it under the cross. It's fucking amazing. Just whips one under the Aston Villa fans. But this one, like, sorry, if you want to know how I'm able to avoid the score, I should have recorded myself watching that match yesterday. Can you would have been so fucking jealous. The excitement, the giddiness, the childishness of me watching that match. But this goal is incredible. Like, whenever Tielemans gets the ball, Morgan Rogers is 5 yards ahead of Youri Tielemans, and he points up the field, says, "There's your pass there, pal." Emile Smith Rowe is defending one-on-one, the most complete centre forward in the Premier League. Clip it over the top, son. And I don't want to praise Morgan Rogers for that. That's fucking so obvious. Mm. And also, I'm going to have a go at Morgan here. Have you never seen Youri Tielemans play before? That ball was only ever going to be putting somebody through on goal. Youri Tielemans isn't going to waste a pass. He's only going to get the ball 50 times in the game. And every one of them is going to be a through ball putting somebody through on goal. And Morgan Rogers should know that at that stage. Conserve your energy. Put your arm down, Morgan. Waste your energy lifting your arm to tell Tielemans where the ball should go. He knows where the ball should go. And the best thing about the goal, though, is Youri Tielemans knows the outcome. He knows the outcome of the situation developing. Like, as soon as he clips that ball over the top, he's already wandering, drifting to the left of centre midfield, back into position, getting ready for the restart because he knows it's a goal. And the pass is fucking perfect. Watkins' touch are perfect. The covering defender is perfect. the finish is absolutely delightful, and the limbs are insane.
Yeah. In November 2020, Liam, we were podcasting back then, believe it or not. Villa beat Arsenal again. Watkins got the double, you remember that. And we asked a simple question on that podcast. We said, is Ollie Watkins the greatest striker of all time? And we went on to say, it's not just his goals, it's his runs, it's his touch, his defensive work for the team. He's incredibly clued in and has an insatiable appetite for work. I mean, some things just never change, do they?
Yeah, they all laughed at us, Conan. Well, they're not laughing anymore.
Take a break. We'll come back with WhatsApp whinges.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
So there's a couple of fines up for discussion, but I don't even know if anybody's getting fined. I don't even know. And that's not me, again, getting carried away. That's me actually looking at the evidence and seeing there's nobody really completely guilty. Does Konsa's cross count as a fine? Diaby forced him right into the byline and Konsa tried to play it across on the right-hand side, but it felt like he was reaching, trying to keep the ball in play more than a cross gone out of play.
I thought that was just another shot. I thought he was just trying to spin that into the into the bottom corner.
Konsa gets his wages. The only other one, only other person who got away with one was Luca Dean for an unnecessary corner. Havertz played this nonsense ball across to no one. And Luca Dean, just too much respect, just assuming somebody would be behind him. Nobody was behind him. Hits it out of play. Thankfully, Havertz was offside. But I actually don't even know if he was offside when you look at the replay.
He definitely wasn't offside, and one of the strangest things that happened in this match, other than Alexander Zinchenko being started, was Gary Neville then going, oh, he's on. The ball has landed at Aston Villa's left back, 10 yards of space. Who gives a fuck? It's grand. The problem here is that Dina has shat the bed and kicked the ball out for a corner, not the fact that Havertz was onside whenever he received the ball and dinked it to the fucking left back in the opposition team.
The first WhatsApp one, you can't be stopping the game because a player gets a ball in the face. Gabriel, Jesus. I mean, how many more examples do we want of this sort of stuff? Look at Dean takes a free kick. It's a soft free kick. He's trying to curl it. He's not absolutely leathered it like John McGinn looked like he was lining up to do. He just floats a little soft free kick 10 meters away off his face. Like, it's not a head injury. It's a stingy face. You can't stop the game for that.
Conan, David Coot, a Villa player has the ball in 20 yards of space. Coot stopped the game because Gabriel had to blow his fucking nose. And then he gave the ball back to Arsenal. Arsenal got the ball back after that. It's a fucking scandalous decision. Were it not for the fact that we won 2-0.
Well, David Coot is next WhatsApp winch, and this is about the linesman, but David Coot having to wave offside for the linesman is fucking scandalous as well. I mean, both times the players were like, are you giving it now? Like, when are you giving this? Like, and it was David Coot eventually, I think, was one that deflected back in behind him, and he was like, no, like, I'm intervening here. The linesman's obviously saving his energy as well. It's offside, boys.
Yeah, they weren't even close as well. I mean, Konsa has stopped running completely and just let him drift off or won them down the left. Maybe Coot saw the linesman flag Havertz off for offside and realized he couldn't be trusted, so he had to intervene for the linesman.
The third WhatsApp wins, I've got four. Who does Zinchenko think he is? And this is before the second half stuff. Going for goal. Jesus, he was so wide on the left. He's hooking the ball. A lot of bodies in his way. Martinez is close to his line. It's not going to happen. And it's not going to happen from Zinchenko.
Do you know what, Colin? I didn't mind that. I didn't mind. Like, you know, what's Zinchenko going to do? Roll the ball to somebody else in a worse position or have the shot? I always say have the shot if the pass is just as difficult. And for a player like Zinchenko, the pass probably is just as difficult as a fucking 50-yard lob over the best keeper in the world.
The final WhatsApp wins. I have never seen a ground empty like that, genuinely. That was crazy. It was like a warm-up for a pre-season friendly in Thailand. This is what it was like. It was like before a match in an obscure, like, just far away place. I think part of it is this weird hatred that Arsenal fans have of Unai Emery. I think they couldn't bear to see this polite, dignified, hard-working man who did a good job for them under trying circumstances, beat them again. They couldn't bear it. They had to clear out. And this club that's supposed to be so together and so united and loving this whole new regime just completely abandoned ship. Oh, there you go. You'll enjoy that analogy. and like, I have suspicions. I always think it's weird that they have this hatred of Emery, who, like I say, is nothing but professional. And, you know, whatever you think of him, even if you don't even think he's a good manager, you can't but respect the honest work that he puts into the job and the profession and how seriously he takes all the jobs that he has, especially your job. Like, I think it's because they hounded him out that they have this thing, because they ridiculed him, really. And it didn't get any better for them anytime soon after that. In fact, it got a lot worse. They had to wait four seasons for Arteta to finally kick into gear, for you to, as you say, for him to reveal himself as this elite manager that you think he is. And I think they realized the laughing stock that they had made up in Unai Emery went on and did another good job after that, knocked them out of Europe after that as well with Villarreal, went on and won again after that. I just think life would be easier for them if Emery wasn't a good manager. If he would just go away, you know, not this constant reminder that we really poke fun at him, and it turns out he is serious, he is good. And he's done nothing, whatever about all that, he's done nothing to warrant this weird vitriol towards him.
It's so strange. I was trying to explain this to my wife. You know, I told her, I was watching the match, I was like, this result is even better because there's a huge proportion of Arsenal fans who hate Emery. And she was obviously baffled by this because 90% of the time she's heard the name Emery in her life, it has been me saying we should call our children Unai for a boy or Emery for a girl. Or, you know, it's me talking about how that period in November, December 2022 is the most consequential in my life because that's when we got married and when Unai Emery got the Aston Villa job. So she obviously couldn't understand what was happening or what had happened during Emery's stint at Arsenal. So I tried to explain it there. You know, he took over from a manager who'd been in the job 20-odd years and had let a stale, festering atmosphere settle over the club, and it was full of snakes. And I don't mean snakes because they were sniping and venomous. I mean snakes because they were lying around their fucking stomachs like lazy bastards. And then I said, in his first year, he improved the team. He finished fifth and got to a European Cup final and lost to a good Chelsea team. And then after 13 games, the next season, he had lost three games. Drew too many games, but lost three, the same as Man City. So they sacked him and replaced him with somebody who did a worse job for 3 years after being given everything he wanted and all the adulation in the world.
Yeah.
And then that was the end of my story. And after about 5 seconds of silence, we realized that I hadn't answered the question, but I had done my best.
Yeah.
Like some things defy explanations. Sometimes you just have to accept that the world is full of fucking freaks, geeks, and losers. Like, how insular do you have to be to say that? You know, the amount of times I've heard this, say that he'll let you down in year two, like he always does. Like he always does. I mean, just have a cursory look at his CV. If you're gonna speak out loud, try to make sure it doesn't sound like a fucking air horn being squeezed into the void. Like year two at Sevilla. Year two at Sevilla, won his second of three Europa Leagues. Year two at PSG, won the treble. Year two at Villarreal, got to the semis of the Champions League that he qualified for by winning the Europa League. Their only major honour. Year two at Aston Villa, currently giving me the best season of my life, having taken over a club in a relegation battle for the first third of the season and qualifying them for fucking Europe that year. Like, this information is publicly available, but because you need desperately to believe that those 3 years in the wilderness under a man who signed Zinchenko to try to get you over the line wasn't a waste of time, you have to believe that Emery was shite. It is mental.
It really is. There's no explanation for it. And with that, I'm going to introduce a new sting that we have for the show, and we'll come back with the award categories after this. Sometimes I feel like with Arsenal players, there's too much showmanship, trying to show people online that they're trying.
There is something still that you just can't trust about this Arsenal team. They still seem to carry that air of wateriness about it.
Let me tell you, no matter how good Declan Rice goes on to be for Arsenal, he's never going to be a bargain at 105 million. It's like me spending 10 grand on a TV and then calling it a bargain because it turns on every time I use it. Doing exactly what I want to pay for.
It's like, you know, it doesn't matter how many huddles Zinchenko gets him into. It doesn't matter how many times Odegaard tries to tell Saka it's grand for kicking the ball. Bukayo Saka knows it's grand. Odegaard giving Saka advice about how to play football. Fuck me.
They will now rewrite their own histories, and they'll even justify their own ignorance. Like, all this time, they'll be saying stuff like, what was Gerrard doing with this team? It's dismissing the magic that Emery is weaving, and do not underestimate that for a second.
Martinelli was good. I'll probably start to respect him a little bit more once he learns how to shave.
But it's also ignoring the groundswell feeling over, what, 13 months ago now, that Villa fans were delusional, that it wouldn't get any better.
Trying to explain to him, you just don't understand. I know you think Ten Hag is
is good and he's the man to do this and you need to give him time, but you don't understand what having a good manager is like. You didn't appreciate the fact that you had Alex Ferguson, and then since that you haven't been able to see the benefit of having somebody who's actually at the top of their game, somebody who's a really, really genuine world-class manager.
It was only a year ago we were all having serious conversations about Villa passing the ball around at the back. Are they doing it a bit too much, though? If having to listen to that nonsense is a trade-off for watching an Aston Villa team this good, I will sign that contract happily. For bringing the real Villa community tighter together and for allowing us all to completely buzz off everything that's happening in the club, we can do that in our inner circle still, because we know that everything we've been through, like, we know it was tough, and we know that nobody really understood and nobody respected us. Like, I will bite your hand off for that deal right now. Let everybody else talk all the rubbish they want, because the trade-off is so worth it. Let's start with the Ronnie Rosenthal Award, Liam. Where was Luca Dean hiding these throw-ins? What was all those days we were watching Matt Cash saunter over to the left wing to take a throw? Luca Dean has an arm and he gets one right into the box. Good trajectory. The ball's been headed out, headed back in. It's sometimes, I know you wouldn't want your team doing that all the time, but sometimes when it is happening, let's be honest, it's exciting. That is fun football sometimes. People trying to clear the ball, people heading it back into the mixer, and it comes out, and McGinn, it's a right-footed volley, gets blocked down. I think McGinn caught it well as well. And it comes to Watkins' head then, and he loops one just on top of the net. Raya was scrambling.
Yeah, it's a really good thing to do at the start of a game as well. Let's see how he settled down there. And it turns out to be a really good spank from McGinn, I would say, on his right foot as well. He caught it really sweetly. And it's a really good idea from Ollie Watkins to try to lob the keeper with his head from the edge of the box. But unfortunately, he was trying to lob a goalkeeper with his head from the edge of the box.
Two Arsenal chances. Havertz, I should have done way better. Trossard just... There you go, Twitter, you can take that one. It was sort of passed inside to Havertz's run, save from Martinez, but straight at him, to be honest. And then, Jesus, Saka crosses for Jesus, and Jesus heads it. Saka's on the right, comes back on his left, like he always does, and he swings it in swing into Jesus, and he tries to put it into the near post. Hits it wide at that near post. It's such an awful header. I mean, he should be scoring that.
I mean, yeah, you started that off and you could have ended it after the first sentence, but you said, I mean, Jesus, Saka crosses it to Jesus. That's enough. That's enough of an explanation for what happened next.
Diaby annoyed me at one stage. I mean, he did track back at one stage and take the ball off Trossard, which was notable. It was very notable. Mr. Vyman liked it, but we had men over at this stage. This is the one that Zaniolo held up Ben White, one of those many occasions that Zaniolo held up Ben White, and he rolls him. And he gets pulled, I think, comes back for the yellow card on Ben White then. But he gets the ball away, and Diaby has men over, and he just passes it to an Arsenal player. And he just, again, it's one of those situations where he's coming through the middle, and he's got too many options, and he just sort of malfunctions and rolls it, or just stands on the ball, so somebody takes it off him.
Yeah, Diaby's finding himself in these positions too many times where he's just... He just looks like he's run out of ideas. He looks like he can't see one of the multiple runs that an Unai Emery team gives you. It's like, you roll the ball, smash the ball into Ollie Watkins' feet. Let's see what'll happen here. Like, he doesn't have to overthink this. He doesn't have to overcomplicate it, but he does slow it down too much. Or he plays too quickly sometimes as well and is playing passes that no one else is expecting because it's a ridiculous ball to try to play. He needs a rest, needs a reset. He probably just needs the summer.
We've definitely seen a lot of flashes. We keep going back and forward on Diaby. Yeah. We keep getting so excited about him. Saka probably had a big chance as well. Odegaard crosses it. Saka heads it over. Didn't seem to think himself that it was too big of a chance. He gets over Luca Dean for it. And then it all kicks into gear.
I'll tell you something. Luca Dean is a very lucky boy. That didn't go on. Can you imagine what we'd be saying in the podcast if our fullback got beaten in the air at the back post by Bukayo Saka?
And
yeah, like that was terrible, terrible defending from Luca Dean. Really gets away with.
And Saka or not, I mean, he should know by the stage. Like that's an automatic bonus for your wages if you can clear that ball at the back post, no matter who's there. You're just always so thankful that you're full. But and I actually thought the header was that bad. I thought Luca Dean did it. I went to give him the credit initially, and then saw it landed on Saka's head. And then Watkins. Oh my God. It's off the inside of the post and wide at the other fucking side. When has this ever happened? The ball goes off the inside of the post, goes across the line, but then doesn't curve in until it's past the other post. Unbelievable bad luck. This is when Gabriel just passed it off the back of Zinchenko. I mean, we always talk about getting the like of Jordan Pickford into a game. Get Gabriel and Zinchenko into a game, for God's sake. Just give him the ball. Let Gabriel try to drill it off his back. See what happens. It'll fall to Ollie Watkins and then all sorts will happen. And Kelly Kate said that the title race can do strange things to players. Like, yes, and Gabriel can do strange things on the ball quite often.
Yeah, there can be no greater what the fuck moment than kicking the ball off your own teammate's back who's fucking 10 yards in front of you. Terrible from Gabriel. But can there be a more unlucky moment than what happened to Ollie Watkins there? I mean, if the fucking groundskeeper had cut the grass in the opposite direction, that ball might have spun in. You're right. I've never seen that happen before. Terrible, terribly unlucky. And he's such a good finish. Reyes not even close to the ball,
no.
Which isn't that surprising.
He was mid-celebration. He was just about to reel away, and it was like, what? Like it was when he saw him hit off the inside of the post, I think that was clarification that, yeah, I've done it. And then just went wide at the other side. Anyway. Trossard had that was the big one then for Arsenal, I think, on top of Jesus. But this was really annoying because we were so strong in this period. We were blocking so many shots, so many crosses. Diego Carlos was just being attracted to the ball. And again, we got out, we blocked another shot, and then it just bobbles in behind to Jesus. And you're like, oh, for God's sake, like, you know, this is what's going to undo us. We actually did something well, and they get a lucky brick, and Jesus squares it. Fall to Trossard. It's a great save from Martinez. It's a bad miss from Trossard. Both can be true, but geez, they really should have scored.
Yeah, I don't know. Were we feeling sorry for ourselves? Because that just came almost immediately after Ollie Watkins hit the post. And it was just that one moment where we switch off. And you're right, we get unlucky that it falls to Jesus. But I don't think we react as quickly as we had been for the previous 40 minutes of the game. And it's a brilliant save. I mean, get your feet sorted. Get your feet out then as well. Stay calm. Stay big. Breathe. You can control this. It sounds like I'm giving mental health advice there. But to be honest, Emi Martinez is probably the best thing that has happened to my mental health in my lifetime. Because the amount of times now when a player is just going through one-on-one with an Aston Villa keeper, that used to be game over. I used to have already conceded a goal. So when Aston Villa eventually did concede a goal in real life, I would actually have conceded two in my head and would have had all that anger building up. But now I'm just watching it to see, wonder what Martinez saved this. It's absolutely ridiculous to save his... preposterous, incredible save, and such a big moment in the game.
Remember the time Leicester just cleared the ball from their own half, and then Pepe Reina appears on the right wing, misses the ball. The difference now is that players can go through one-on-one in the box, and still not done. It's not over. The only other nomination, well, Saka got one onto his left and curled around the far bottom corner, and then Tielemans. Who does Zinchenko think he is? This comes from a corner and it breaks to Zinchenko, who tries to nutmeg Tielemans basically in his own box, and Tielemans takes it off him and absolutely drills it to the top corner. Like, thanks for that, Zinchenko, you fool. I'm going to put this in the top bins now. But once again, a hairline is what holds us back, and it hits off the crossbar and the post and goes back out. It's such a lovely strike from him.
Zinchenko getting beaten in a 50-50. Like, imagine my shock. I nearly shut down the stream thinking I was watching a deep fake. Like, this couldn't be happening. Like, AI has come on leaps and bounds. How are we going to get the grips with this, Conan? In the run under the Irish, the UK, the USA general elections, how are we going to be able to tell the difference between what's real and what's fucking fabricated? We're definitely not going to ask Mikel Arteta anyway. He can't tell the difference between what a real left back is and a fucking huddle expert. Like, how are we going to protect and defend democracy in this year of elections? We're certainly not going to be fucking asking Zinchenko anyway. He couldn't defend a fucking a celebrity in a LA court. Like he'd be hopping over the witness box, helping OJ get the gloves on. Like you'd have to wonder, is it playing against Kai Havertz and Jesus in training that is getting this lad minutes in the Premier League? Because he is not real.
So I think to wrap up the Rosenthal Award, I think Trossard missed the biggest chance, but I think Watkins and Tielemans came closer.
Oh, they definitely came closer. I'm sorry, just in the build-up to that as well, the corner is real. I want to see this again. The corner's really interesting from Aston Villa. There's absolute mayhem in the box. Like, everyone ran in, everyone ran out. They all mixed, completely changed positions in the box. And then it just gets cleared at the front post, comes back out to Zinchenko, luckily enough. And then the effort's absolutely out of this world. But the corner, I want to see us try that again. I want to see what actually happened there. But obviously, we're just going to be getting the replay of the shot because it was so ridiculous. And if it was a unfortunate cutting of the grass that stopped Ollie Watkins, it was probably just one lick of paint or one fat patch of a lick of paint on the post that stopped that going in.
Yeah.
Terribly, terribly unlucky.
The Peter Enkelman What the Fuck Award, I mean, there's no beating Gabriel or Zinchenko. Both should have been goals. They're both mistakes. I only had one nomination from a Villa point of view, and it really shows how good we were, how on it we were. It was down the left-hand side. It was Luca Dean passing it back to Pau Torres, just sells him short. And luckily enough, Konsa and Carlos were there to converge on any danger and basically snuff it out to the other side of the pitch. But yeah, it was just like, that was the only what the fuck I can remember from a Villa point of view. Dean trying to pass it back to Torres and selling him short. And then we have our centre-back out at left, out on the sideline, which is never a good thing.
No, it brings back terrible memories. Yeah. There was another moment where Torres kind of wandered into midfield and he was dwelling on the ball, and then he plays the pass after the midfielder commits to the block that he knows he's going to play as well. It was really bad from Torres. I think it's Jesus, or maybe Saka actually gets in and Saka whips one across the box, and then luckily Havertz is afraid of the ball and seems to pull his head out of it. This is an impression of a fucking turtle. Pulls his head into his neck and the ball goes over the top of it. Mad stuff.
Let's do the Tim Sherwood replay. Two number 10s and bamboozled them award. I mean, Liam, on another day, this would have been a Ulrich Glenn Whelan take a 90th minute penalty award, so we need to mention it. Keeping Bailey, I'm like, we're talking about bravery. Imagine the amount of venom this guy's been getting spat at him from us when he doesn't play Bailey. Can you imagine that? Would you imagine saying that a year ago? one of those games, anyway, it was like, just play Bailey. What are you doing? Stop messing around. But he holds him. It's like Mel Gibson and Braveheart, William Wallace telling everybody to be patient. I know they're getting closer. I know they're about to trample all over us. Hold, like, don't worry, the plan is going to work. Just hold off and then we'll strike at the right time when they're not expecting it. And Leon Bailey comes on with 30 minutes to go. And like, it deserves credit now that it all works.
Yeah, it does deserve credit. It's just such an absolute live wire. Again, the Sky Sports commentators need to watch a little bit more Aston Villa. They were talking, saw Leon Bailey warming up, and they said he'll provide width and genuine pace. As if he wasn't going to be replacing the winger with genuine pace in Moussa Diaby. And as if that is how you characterise Leon Bailey. Leon Bailey is like fucking Michael Flatley. He can move his feet so quick. He's absolutely out of this world. He nominated himself for a Paul Merson. Oh, that's just filthy award. Where it was down the wing, the ball comes into Bailey's feet and he just releases it with his heel.
To Konsa.
Konsa and Zinchenko both let the ball roll down the line before they caught up with Leon Bailey's mind. Like, he'd put his fucking pencil down, all the answers figured out, and Konsa was still reading the fucking question. Luckily Zinchenko was still filling his name in on the front cover, but Konsa eventually cottons on and catches up with Leon Bailey, and he's nearly free on goal. The pass is so good.
Yeah.
He's just a player that has got everything now. And to say that he's a player who will give you width and pace is so demeaning and so disrespectful and so bizarre for somebody who is paid to watch football. But like, paid to watch football, so you would expect that he's watching it and you would expect that he's interested in it. So even the games that he's not getting paid to watch, Conan, he might fucking watch them anyway. He might be interested in the best attacking player in the league other than Ollie Watkins, for fuck's sake.
I mean, we should add a nomination in here for Morgan Rogers' position as well, because, you know, we have been seeing him on the left sort of, you know, the way we've been used to it is Diaby up top. Tielemans obviously couldn't play there because he had to play midfield because Douglas Luiz being out. I mean, we can go through the whole season. We can look at it macro level wise, what Emery's been doing with what he has. But even just in this game alone, it's just down to bare bones. And he'll still put the right structure in place. He'll still put Rodgers up there, put Zaniolo over there, get Zaniolo doing exactly what he needs him to do. Hold Leon Bailey in reserve to do exactly what he needs him to do. And let Morgan Rodgers add that bit of steel as a third man in midfield when we needed him.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, Morgan Rodgers really—he was good on the ball. He was aggressive on the ball, I would say as well. He put himself around as well, put himself around the pitch really well, got into good positions. And the really interesting thing about this game is we had a better set of players. If you include Leon Bailey, we had a better set of players in midfield, unavailable for this game on paper. Yeah. I mean, you know, Jacob Ramsey, Kamara, Douglas Luiz, Buendia, and Leon Bailey are five midfielders who didn't start this game. Like, that's how good a performance this was. That's real. Arsenal haven't had an injury all year. Like, that's how good a performance this was. We could arguably had a second choice midfielder out there, Colin. Definitely a midfield that, if we had a pick to the other midfield, nobody would have bat an eyelid. Sky commentators certainly wouldn't realize it was our second choice midfield.
No, and when we were being treated to the goal from the last game at home to Arsenal in the build-up to this one, I realised, because Tielemans and McGinn were so pivotal to it, obviously McGinn scores it, and I was like, well, they're still playing, and I was like, hang on, they both weren't playing as a double pivot for us, they both weren't playing centre midfield, like, because we had Kamara and Luiz, who were so important for that goal as well, and those two were released for, like, Tielemans was playing off the striker at that stage, McGinn was on the wing, Bailey was there, and it was just like, oh my god, how crippled are we now going away to Arsenal? Again, this team who had won 10 out of 11 Premier League matches in 2024, never been behind, like I say, the only one they didn't win was a draw away to Man City. I mean, this was all advantage Arsenal. Like, Liverpool lost, Arsenal should be sitting top of the league now, this is how I thought this was going to go. And instead, Emery had just cooked something absolutely special for them and asked them, how do you like it? And then to that point, in the Tim Sherwood Award, how ridiculous is this? Unai Emery deserves a Tim Sherwood Award this week. Speaking of disrespectful, Unai Emery, it's now a record, and all the record that he's done at Aston Villa, he hasn't even completed a one full season for us yet, and he's just racking up the record.
And he's in his dreaded second season as well, Conor, where he always bottles it.
And this one is, like, we're five games to go still, and he's already broken it. 19 wins in a 38-game season. That's the first time that's ever happened. I mean, when I saw this coming up, when we equaled it, and I was like, oh my god, we've done that so quickly. I was like, how are we ever going to go back to the way it was? I mean, how would we ever get used to what it was like back in the day when we were happy to get the wins here and there? We're so used to winning now. It's happened so quickly. What the fuck is going on here?
You're saying you were thinking about that whenever you saw that record come? Ever since Unai Emery got the job, you've been thinking, how are we going to go back to the way it was? Because it's definitely going to happen. This isn't going to be sustained. There's no way that we can keep hold of Unai. It's going to be shit whenever he leaves. You've been thinking that since day fucking two of Unai Emery's career.
Yeah, that's fair enough. Well, let's go to the John Gregory, if I had a gun, I would have shot him, quote of the week. And this is a hot category this week. It's going to be hard to pick. The first nomination is Ollie Watkins to Troy Deeney. Ollie Watkins, when he reeled away, he did a little shush celebration, puts up a picture of that on his Instagram, and he says, not bad for a winger trying to be a striker, and he tags in Troy Deeney in it. I mean, what a ridiculous thing to say from Troy Deeney. I mean, a winger trying to be a striker. This is an idiot trying to be a football manager. I mean, how little regard does Troy Deeney have for the role of a striker that he played in, that he thinks anybody could be hitting 19 goals and 10 assists from centre forward for a top four Premier League team? How easy does he think that position is? I mean, if he thinks he's better than Harry Kane in so many aspects, How shit does he think all the strikers are? This is unbelievable that he would be trying to disrespect Ollie Watkins in this type of form. Never mind, we were asking the question about Ollie Watkins being the greatest striker of all time 4 years ago. But it was great to see Watkins just call him out, tag him on Instagram, put up the picture, saying not bad. How do you think about that?
He doesn't think that's the problem, Ollie. Like, you know, maybe wasting your time with this. This is a lad who said he was better at Harry Kane at certain things. So it tells you what he thinks a centre forward is. He thinks a centre forward is someone who stands with his back to goal 18 yards out and tries to control the ball, or someone who runs directly at a football and hits it at as hard as he can from 12 yards out to fucking get 50% of the goals that he got in the Premier League. And I'd say about fucking six of them were against David De Gea, who was so afraid of the ball, he jumped out of the fucking way. Like, Troy Deeney isn't a serious human being. He wasn't a serious footballer. He was a fucking thug, and he was shite at football. And the fact that he gets any airtime probably tells you more about the social media age that we live in than it does about anything else.
Well, you'll like the next nomination. It comes from Martin O'Neill, who said, in response to Troy Deeney's comment, he said, maybe that's why Troy only lasted six games as a manager of Forest Green. he couldn't tell the difference between a winger and a striker.
Oh, that's brilliant. Good old Martin O'Neill. Always good for a quote. Not so good for a European Cup run. But Martin O'Neill is absolutely right. Troy, he's been playing centre forward for 4 years. Like, what is Troy Deeney talking about? He hasn't played on the wing for Aston Villa, except whenever Steven Gerrard forced us to run into the corner flag anytime we had the fucking ball. He wasn't playing as a winger, though. He was playing as a fucking martyr.
The next nomination, of course, it was never going to be long until we brought around Unai Emery. And he was asked after the game about this win moving them closer to Champions League football. And Unai Emery responded, he said, yes, but today the 3 points we played for is the same points we played for last week against Brentford. And we were winning 2-0 and we drew. It's the same points. It's the same points we're going to play for next week against Bournemouth. And if we are not being consistent like we have been today, we can lose. This is the demand and this is the level. Sorry, Arsenal. It's not personal. It's only points. That's all we're after.
Yeah, that's great. Great to see him finally acknowledge the fact as well that we are indeed on a Champions League run. I mean, next week we'll be saying that it was an absolute waste of fucking time talking about the Champions League because our season's over. But, you know, let's just enjoy this moment, Conor, and let's enjoy the fact that the best manager we've had in our lifetime is saying that we can qualify for the Champions League, because I, for one, believe him.
Sorry about that, Liam. I did cut out a part where he said they're going for top five. What can I say? I made the quote sound better. But the other nomination, I've got two more. The next one is, you'll not be surprised, is Unai Emery. Unai Emery on Instagram. He tags Troy Deeney, right? And puts up a post of the players celebrating. The second picture is him celebrating. And he says, happy players, happy fans. What else? This is what he says. Happy players, happy fans. What else? This is why we work. Simply, we were the team today we want to be and fully deserve the W tomorrow. Tomorrow, back to work hard. Focus on Lille. Nothing is done yet. Up the Villa.
What a man, Conor. What a man. Knows exactly how to pull at your heartstrings, and he knows exactly how to put a team together to win games of football, collect 3 points, whether or not it's against Arsenal or Bournemouth, as he says himself.
And the last nomination, you're going to have to pick the winner here, so let me know if this one is your winner.
You're going to have to let me know what the fucking nominations were at this rate.
Last one comes from Liam Gallagher of Oasis fame. He says, don't fuck with the Villa. So give me your winner. Is it Martin O'Neill? Is it Watkins to Troy Deeney? Is it Emery on all the points are the same? It's not personal. Is it Emery on Instagram? Happy players, happy fans. What else? Is it Liam Gallagher? Don't fuck with the Villa.
It's definitely not going to be Liam Gallagher. I'll be dead in my cold, cold grave before I give him an award, Conor. Especially whenever it's because he's celebrating Man City. I'm not happy about that. And I'm glad we've actually avoided that topic of conversation until this point. I'm not sure how much longer the podcast could have gone on without me getting sick. But it's going to have to be Martin O'Neill. It's such a good put down. It's perfect. It's perfectly toned. Yeah. And it's perfect as well that it's somebody who's no longer involved with Aston Villa Football Club just pointing out how big of a plonker somebody is.
All right, let's go to the Weimann meter. I think this is going to be a long one. I think it's going to be a hard one. I'm going to try and maybe rank how far they're going up. Basically, who's going up further than the others? Because let's be honest, who's not going up? It's going to be hard to narrow that down. But I'm going to try my best to go through. Go on.
Are we going to do a fucking Brucey bonus? The higher or lower situation here? What's happening?
No, that's an end of season category, don't worry. But I'm just going to try and sort of put them into some sort of rag order for myself anyway. So the first person I have going up, and like, by the way, these being put in order says nothing about how much admiration I have for all these people who are going up on the Weimann meter. But
it's just points on the Weimann meter.
First person going up, I think I've got Alex Moreno coming into midfield again.
Yeah, and he did quite well. He ran around, a lot of energy, was probably a decent sub to make at that stage of the game as well. Yeah, he was fine. I mean, the fact that he played in midfield should bump him up a few spots, but not like he played spectacularly well.
Just ahead of him, going up a little bit further, I've got Luca Dean, because I wasn't sure that he could ever play full 90 minutes, and it turns out he can, and he can assist late on.
And what an assist it was. It was a really good cross into Torres. Yeah, really good shift from Luca Dean. Defensively sound as well. Under a lot of pressure as well, because Arsenal are a hard team to play against, obviously. Odegaard's really good on the ball. He's really good at finding players, and he's nearly always looking to find Saka, which isn't that difficult to understand, seeing when he looks to his left, he's looking at Jesus. Or
and that's the other reason that Luca Dean needs highlighting, because did so well against Saka as well. I've got going up Pau Torres. I mean, it's just so good. This boy is so good. It's absolutely brilliant. It's just brilliant on the ball. It completely changes how we play. Sometimes he's just stuck on the left wing and he'll ping one over to Konza and we're out. Or he'll just hold the ball for an extra second and wait for the picture to change for that extra second. He's always playing in real time. He doesn't decide what he's doing beforehand. He'll just watch at how everything unfolds in front of him and make his decisions based on that. He's a top class operator. His brain's working overtime. It's great to have him there in the team. It makes such a big difference.
Yeah, and a lot of the change of that game in the second half as well was Arsenal not realizing how good he is on the ball and deciding, oh, let's pressure him now because he's receiving the ball on the byline. That doesn't matter. He's just receiving the ball on the byline because he's dropped in there to take it. He just wants the ball. He doesn't care where he gets it. Then Arsenal would spring forward and then all of a sudden we're out because Pau Torres is able to pick any pass he wants.
Yeah. Going up, I've got Emi Martinez. I think, was it the last game we were talking about Emi Martinez being weird against Arsenal? And, you know, just how they seem to be getting into his head sometimes, but he was completely calm. He was flawless today, made some unbelievable saves, and his celebrations afterward were brilliant to the crowd. They kept doing a big sort of dramatic cheer to call him back, and he would turn around and give the fist again, and then he would start it again, and he would turn around and do it again. Eventually he stopped it, but it was lovely to see. It was him just really enjoying himself.
Yeah, he was brilliant. He was brilliant with his feet as well. He was brilliant at waiting for Arsenal to come in so he could roll it back to Pau Torres on the byline. He made a brilliant save with his feet. A really good performance from somebody who wasn't remotely weird today.
Going up. And I think I'm getting these right in the order that I have them in. Like, this is how, like, each time I'm moving up, the player has gone up a little bit further than the other player. Going up, I've got John McGinn. Because this guy, it just feels like, I don't know where this boy's ceiling is. He continues to improve. We don't know where John McGinn's ceiling is. And we don't even know where his best position is. It doesn't matter. It feels like wherever we put him on any given day, it won't always happen. But he could be the best player in that position that day. You know, and like, put him into centre midfield alongside Youri Tielemans, but you know the baseline is going to be absolute balls to the wall, flat out work. They're going to have to absolutely want something way more than me, and that's not going to happen. They're going to have to fight for every little bit of space to get, and he was just clearing out things in there. He was barging people out of the way. He was tracking back, driving it forward, spinning, just his body language on the ball was great, just looking forward again, calm. I thought he was really good.
Yeah, there was one moment as well where you could see him. He was, you know, he wasn't in focus in the camera shot. He was kind of in behind the centre forward. Arsenal just turned over the ball and we're going down the left wing. And John McGinn looks around and sees that there's nobody there. I'm not sure. Diaby must have been dragged forward as well or something. And he just puts his head down and just absolutely barrels back into position and forces Arsenal to turn back around because that avenue has been shut off just by sheer desire from the captain. Yeah. What a captain.
Going up, the spider cam replays. They're absolutely brilliant. They are just so dramatic looking and just gives us a different angle. I think I mentioned FIFA earlier on. It's almost like that where you control where you want the camera to look at, come over the top and just start gliding along as the play is progressing. Very nice. It's a nice dynamic to the game.
Definitely was a nice dynamic to the game. Yeah, it was lovely.
Going up. Now I'm trying to figure out who's going up further than the next man. But going up, Leon Bailey. But see, mate, we already spoken about it. Is Leon Bailey gotten to the Jack Grealish stage where he no longer belongs on this? On this.
No, Leon Bailey, of course, deserves a go. He had a filthy moment. He had a goal. He changed the game when he came on. He's not even need to change the game. He just gives you that extra energy because we had started to get on top of the game. We started to, you know, this isn't just a flash in the pan. This isn't just, you know, straight out of the dressing rooms and being on top in a game that we were struggling in. We were clearly going to dominate that second half, and then to be able to bring on a better player than the player is already on, what an injection that was for everybody.
Yeah. Going up, I've got Ollie Watkins. Now, I know Ollie Watkins is probably higher than anybody on this meter ever, but I just mean in terms of, like, he doesn't have much further to go, so this is based on what's happened this week, who's traveling furthest this week, and I've got Ollie Watkins slotted in here right now. We don't even need to go through it again. I mean, we know everything Ollie Watkins gives us. We know everything we love about Ollie Watkins, and he's just given us record goal scorers. Now, if he scores one more, he's Villa's top ever goal scorer in a Premier League season. And again, he's got 5 games to go as well, and he's doing that without hitting the penalties too. Just shows how effective he's been, how unbelievable his output has been, how consistent it's been. I would actually say that he's at the level now. He must be so confident that he'll want to take the penalties again because he's just playing elite football now.
He's the best player in the Premier League this season.
Yeah, like this is the thing. Like some people are whispering it. Like, you know, Ollie Watkins deserves a shout for player of the season. Who has been better than him? That's not a big shout. He's one off the top scorer. He's got the most non-penalty goals. He's got the most assists. This boy is absolutely killing everybody else. He's leading the charge for a team into the top four who aren't far off third and second. Ollie Watkins has been phenomenal. There's no caveat to it. It's not a token. This isn't Cole Palmer scoring 10 penalties for Chelsea, doing really well, but they're down mid-table. This is a team actually competing.
Cole Palmer's running around trying to nutmeg people every time. Cole Palmer's not a serious footballer yet. Are you fucking bringing him into the conversation for? I know you were using it as a contrast, but fuck me, Connor, that's so insulting. Ollie Watkins, yes, Ollie Watkins has the best numbers this season, and anybody who spends 5 minutes watching an Aston Villa game for the first time will be like, oh, right, Ollie Watkins isn't just a centre forward. He literally gives you everything. Yeah. Literally. He is so strong on the ball. Play it on his feet. Play it in behind. Ollie Watkins will beat the man there. He'll beat them with power or he'll beat him with pace. He's brilliant at passing the ball, as exemplified by the fact that he's got 10 assists as well as his 19 goals. Ollie Watkins is clearly the best player in the league this year. There's no need to whisper it. It's just the case that he is. And it's certainly not Cole Palmer.
Remember the Sky Sports graphic only a couple of months ago where they had who's been the player of the season so far? James Maddison was on the graphic, you know, a big anyway, forget about those guys. I've got 3 more going up, so the third highest traveler or third farthest traveler on the Vyman meter going up. It feels harsh, but it is testament to the other two that I have. Is Diego Carlos. Diego Carlos was monstrous. He was brilliant. He was everywhere. He was in the way of everything. Once again, he got man of the match against Arsenal. He was all over the place, all over them, throwing them out of the way, good on the ball. Just a brilliant defensive performance, especially in the first half as well, when it felt like we needed to dig in a bit more. and this is now especially backing it up twice. Remember he had that quote that Arsenal fans were just ready to kill him for when he said, we're not afraid of Arsenal. And that was going to be, like, they've been waiting. They're going to use that next season if Arsenal get a result against Villa. They're going to throw that back at him. But both times, he's gotten man of the match since. Both times, Villa have kept a clean sheet. Both times, they've won. And he's been really good, and he was brilliant again.
Yeah, he had a really, really good 25 minutes in that first half when we were under the cosh. And not even, it's not like Arsenal had loads of chances or loads of clear goal-scoring chances, but that was because of how well we defended those situations. We defended after Odegaard played the pass. Odegaard's really good at playing those passes. But the recoveries from Carlos and from Konsa, to Pau Torres every once in a while as well, it made sure that we stayed in the game in those 25 minutes. And then the second half, sure, we just cruised through it. And Carlos was a large part of that as well. He's really good on the ball, really calm on the ball. Yeah, very, very, very good performance.
Before I do the last two, the only thing I've got going down this week is Arsenal's pants. I mean, Emile Smith Rowe bent these boys over a barrel a couple of years ago because Aston Villa showed a bit of interest. He didn't even start half their games the season before that. and they pandered him. They gave him the number 10 shirt. They did a big reveal. They gave him a bumper new contract. And he's done nothing for them since. He certainly didn't do anything when he was chasing Ollie Watkins there for that second goal.
Yeah, add Emile Smith Rowe to the list of players who gets a big contract, gets a big reputation because he plays for a Sky Sports Big Six team and is English.
Yeah. Going up, big Zaniolo's big back is back, Liam. We took it away from him. We said we're not calling him Big Zaniolo, but he has deserved that title back. His first name, once again, is Big, and he is. Jesus, this boy's brilliant. This boy's hard to work out, isn't he? When you see him like that, you're like, wow, if he did this every game, you'd be spending a fortune to keep him here. I mean, Martinez is playing balls out to him, long balls, he's holding it up. He was bullying Ben White. The attitude that he had as well, though, was the other thing. He was sharp. At one stage, this shows you how much he was focused today. He was complaining to the ref, as is his wont. Bailey had been dragged down. He stopped complaining and ran back in the position. He just checked himself and ran back over and gave us our shape on the left. He was winning corners when we were under pressure. He was roasting Ben White, like, so much so. This is why Zaniolo really deserves praise. So much so that Ben White got brought off early and gave me clean sheen points for my FPL team. Because Ben White was off before it all kicked off. So Zaniolo was super. He was really good. It was just all that ruggedness that he has was channeled into aggression and into strength and into annoyance for the other team. He was just Big Zaniolo again.
Yeah, and then Emery said he told him before the game that he needed him. And he was right. He needed that. Yeah. That's what he needed. He needed that Zaniolo. He needed the player we thought we were getting on loan at the start of the season. That was a really, really good performance from Zaniolo. And at the top of the show, you said nobody was trying nutmegs for no reason. Well, Zaniolo tried one in the first half and it worked. I mean, this fella would nutmeg a lamppost. The commentators didn't even mention it, though. Like, they were talking about the fucking Kai Havertz rejuvenation or the title race or Man City or some bollocks. Anything other than the beautiful little nutmeg that Zaniolo just completed on the left wing. It was lovely outside the boot, just through the legs, knocking around the other side and go again. But that wasn't the Zaniolo we got. We obviously got a nutmeg. He was on the pitch. But we got the completely different Zaniolo. We got the effort. We got to just being satisfied with winning easy corners off numpties who didn't realise that you weren't actually trying to do anything but run down the clock. We got an absolutely brilliant performance from Big Nicolo.
Yeah, he was super. And the person I have going up most on the Vima meter is Youri Tielemans, because I was worried when I knew you had him going to centre midfield. I was worried about him lasting the whole game. I was worried going away to Arsenal with this. And he was super. He was brilliant. He was good off the ball, like when we were defending, and especially when we had the ball. His positioning was so good. Like he always shows for the ball. Every time a fullback has it, every time somebody's stuck on the sideline, on the byline, he is the triangles master. Like, Tielemans receiving the ball was available over and over and over, and he was turning, he was playing three balls, like you say. He was just brilliant. It didn't look like his energy had waned, like we've seen happen a lot in the past. It was such a heartening performance from him. And like, again, we needed it. We really did need that Tielemans, and he bossed it.
Yeah, imagine missing the players that I already mentioned, Kamara, Louise, Ramsey, and Buendia. Like I said, we had a better midfield unavailable for selection today than the one that took the field. And we didn't notice.
Yeah.
We didn't notice because Youri Tielemans was so good. Youri Tielemans gave you everything. You'd be hoping that Douglas Luiz would be giving you, or probably on paper, our best player. Like, you know, he's in the conversation for our player of the season this year as well. Obviously, he'd be beaten by Ollie Watkins, who's been the best player in the league. But
whisper.
Youri Tielemans was absolutely brilliant. The assist for the goal is ridiculous, and we probably skirted over it too much because we expect that type of pass from Youri Tielemans. But you're right, the triangles, the amount of passes he received, Jesus Christ almighty. You'll have to go to a rectal doctor after this because they were so fucking cheek clenching, and it was fucking ridiculous. Receiving balls they should never have been asked to receive, and then just pinging them back out completely unflustered, or turning out with a ball, letting it run through his legs, just pinging it straight into Rodgers, turning and facing forward while receiving the ball with his back to the pitch and two Arsenal players closing him down. It was an incredible performance.
This is it. Like, any idea of a press that Arsenal had was quickly made redundant, and it was mostly because of Youri Tielemans. He always just picked himself in the right position, always made himself genuinely available, and then, like you say, had the bravery, the skill, the strength to turn on the ball and then pass it back. Like, every time Arsenal tried to push up, Villa were very quickly put in their comfortable position again and put in their position where they could push them back up. This is why they had so much possession in that match as well, because we put Tielemans in the midfield. There's another option we have now as well. It was just it was just brilliant, really brilliant. And once again, now as well, I'm looking at this guy, like we've given Youri Tielemans a lot of credit this year, and rightly so. So it's not like it's in the same camp as Aniolo at all, but I'm even rating him even higher in my head now that he can put on a performance like that at the heart of midfield against Declan Rice as well.
Who we all know I love. Yeah, and like you said, the main thing is that he did it for 90 minutes.
Yeah. Well, Liam, we could go on for 90 minutes, but we won't. We'll take a breather. We've got Thursday Night Ball back again, and this one was really enjoyable. Just enjoy the rest of the week, folks. Thanks a million for listening. Share it on if you get the chance. Give us a shout on the social media platforms. We'll be happy to get back to you. It's been a great, great week. It's been a great, great season. I know I go back and forward a lot, but I'm very happy that we are. Thank you, and I, Emery. We'll see you soon.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.